The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Citizens-driven initiatives taking place throughout their neighborhoods, demonstrating that even the smallest actions can create big changes. On April 21st, many residents from the Spratfield area met at Chibucto Connections to discuss what our neighborhood can do to make a difference. From this brainstorming session, many great ideas were put forward, such as aeroving exercises throughout the community, a community cleanup, an outdoor concert, a seniors' day games day, and distribution of healthy, low-cost recipes at the local food bank. Everyone left the brainstorming session feeling invigorated and excited to begin planning their events. Mr. Speaker asks the members of this legislature to encourage and support the efforts of their constituents participating in the 101-day movement and thank them for their dedication to making a difference in their neighbourhood.
The time has almost expired for member statements, so while we get ready to move on to oral questions put by members to ministers, we'll now begin. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. The government has stated publicly that the last study done on the economic benefits of the film industry was done in 2004. And, Mr. Speaker, oddly, the Premier actually seems to want to make a virtue of the fact they didn't look at the benefits today that the industry brings. But now we know that CanMac Economics did do a social economic study of the film industry as recently as 2008 and provided it to Film Nova Scotia. It concluded, Mr. Speaker, that the industry has experienced successful growth to date. The further sustainable development of this industry will increasingly become an anchor for Nova Scotia's general economic and social prosperity. I'll table that report for the benefit of the House. I'd like to ask the Premier, why did he ignore this report and its conclusions when he blindly put the film industry and the 2,700 jobs that go with it at risk?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank Screen Nova Scotia for the work they've been doing with government the last number of weeks. Very pleased with the agreement that's been reached. Looking forward to continuing that dialogue over the years to come so that we continue to build an industry in this province, Mr. Speaker, one that will allow for investment, will allow the creative economy to continue to grow. The good news is, Mr. Speaker, we are broadening the benefits when it comes to the creative economy so that more Nova Scotians and more Nova Scotia communities get an opportunity to benefit from that investment.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, you don't thank an industry by cutting them off at the knees. The 2008 report showed that the film industry adds $150 million to the economy of Nova Scotia and employs 2,797 people. That was in 2008. It also reported that the industry adds to our prosperity, immigration, and environmental goals, as were enumerated in the Sustainable Prosperity and Economic or Environmental Goals Act, Mr. Speaker. Those are not included in the $150 million number. To ask the Premier, why didn't the Premier at least ask for an update on this important economic analysis before gutting the film tax credit?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I disagree with the question from the Honourable Member. Mr. Speaker, what has happened, we've seen a coming together of the industry and, Mr. Speaker, and government. They understand the dilemma that the province is faced with. We understand the challenges that they had with the delivery model that we spoke about, Mr. Speaker. We've agreed on a new model that would deliver and broaden the opportunities across this province. Mr. Speaker, that's good news for the industry. We're looking forward for continuing to grow, and we're looking forward, Mr. Speaker, for the not only the film industry to grow, but the entire creative economy to grow.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what the film industry understands is that the government cut them off at the knees without looking at the benefits that they bring, Mr. Speaker, or even consulting with them prior to making such a mess of their industry. This CanMac economic study shows that the industry paid direct taxes to the province in 2008 $13,600,000. $6 million in income tax, which the Premier has acknowledged, but apparently forgot to mention the $4 million in HST and the remainder from other direct taxes. Mr. Speaker, this whole mess could have been avoided if the government had just consulted with the industry and looked at the benefit side before they took the steps they did. Now there is a new formula. Mr. Speaker, has any work been done on the costs, benefits, and tax revenues expected under the new formula? And if so, will the Premier share them with all Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I want to acknowledge the work done by Screen Nova Scotia. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the support that we receive from Nova Scotians as we've gone through what has been a difficult transition for some Nova Scotians. I want to acknowledge the fact that the goodwill that was brought to the table to find a common ground and an understanding for both sides. And we've made a commitment to the sector to continue to work with them, to continue to gain greater knowledge and continue to watch as the fund is developed and put out to the industry. And again, I want to remind all members of this House, Mr. Speaker, that that change will take place for next year's budget. This year's budget has $24 million in it, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, patients are beginning to express their frustration over the mounting pile of cancelled surgeries at the Halifax Infirmary. Elizabeth Collins was to have surgery last Thursday to remove a tumour on her lung, but this surgery, along with hundreds of others, has been cancelled. Her daughter Carolyn told CBC this morning, "This has taken a lot of people down. It's taken our family down." Collins can't get answers as to when her mother's surgery will be rescheduled, and she's very worried her mother's health will deteriorate. So my question to the Premier is this. How long is your government going to allow much-needed surgeries for Nova Scotians to be cancelled before a solution to this problem is found?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. The Minister of Health has said a number of times in this House the challenges have been associated with equipment, including to sterilizing the equipment that we're using those surgeries. Mr. Speaker, it's patient safety is the rationale for what's happening. We've been very encouraged by the fact that equipment has been used from other places across the province, sterilized, and we're now beginning to see some of those surgeries to be booked. Mr. Speaker, there is no way that I can and that we can justify or that we can, quite frankly, tell this family that they don't need that surgery. Of course they need it, and we're doing everything we can as quickly as possible to have all of those surgeries rescheduled in a timely manner.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Jim Murphy has waited more than a year to have surgery on his leg. And last week he was prepped and ready for surgery, but after 4 hours of waiting at the hospital, he was told his surgery wasn't going to happen with no information as to what a new date might be. Murphy and his wife have told CTV News that they both had to take time off work for surgery, and they're very frustrated because there doesn't seem to be an end to the cancellations. So again, my question to the Premier is this. How many Nova Scotians who are waiting for surgery will have their lives disrupted while the government attempts to find a solution to this problem?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health is working with all of our partners to ensure that we can come to a resolution of the challenges facing the delivery of these surgeries. Mr. Speaker, I, like all Nova Scotians, find it unacceptable. The reality of it is, Mr. Speaker, that the piece of equipment that is broken, that sterilizes the instruments that are required to provide safety as these surgeries are done, as challenges are broken, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Health is moving forward to ensure either to replace that or ensure that we have the equipment to come forward. But I share the frustration of those Nova Scotia families, Mr. Speaker. It is unacceptable, and the Minister of Health is moving as quickly as possible to have those surgeries rescheduled.
the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, a year ago, on the eve of a legal strike, this government had on a regular basis announcements in terms of how many surgeries were going to be canceled in the face of that situation. And we now have three times more surgeries canceled than what occurred back then, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. What is it going to take for the government to recognize that this must be addressed very, very quickly, and we need a backup plan in place to prevent this kind of backlog from happening again?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I agree with the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker. It's completely unacceptable. It's why the Minister of Health has been engaging with our partners to ensure that there is a backup plan if this ever happens again, Mr. Speaker. But it is unacceptable to these Nova Scotians that have had their surgeries cancelled. Just like, Mr. Speaker, it was unacceptable to have their surgeries cancelled when a potential labour disruption came into this force. It's why we supported essential service legislation, and it's why we wish we could have had their help to ensure it got through this.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier. The Premier has been very clear about capping the tax paid by large financial corporations like banks, that it was done, in the words of his own budget, to encourage growth for them. Meanwhile, Mr. Speaker, our film industry remains in limbo about whether they are capped or not. I'll ask the Premier, why is he so quick to give big banks a clear answer about their tax breaks, but won't give the same courtesy to Nova Scotia's homegrown film industry?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to tell the Honourable Member that the amount of taxation the banks pay prior to this budget will remain the same as they pay after the budget, Mr. Speaker. I want to also tell him that I'm very encouraged and supportive of the work that's being done by the film industry and the creative economy to come together to help build a fund that will allow the industry to continue to move forward. We have told them that we continue to monitor that and continue to be engaged with them as this fund is rolled out.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the point of my question was to see clarity for the film industry equivalent to the clarity the government gives to the banks. But when the Premier says, yes, they're capping their tax, but there's no financial cost to the government, that actually creates more uncertainty for what he's done for the banks, Mr. Speaker. How can you encourage growth by putting something in your budget that actually doesn't have any impact? I'm now confused about both, Mr. Speaker, instead of just the film industry. But I am particularly interested, Mr. Speaker, in knowing why the Premier is happy to leave the film industry in limbo about whether they are capped or not while he is providing this tax break to our biggest banks.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to again thank the Honourable Member for the question. Again, I want to say thank you to the Screen Nova Scotia and the work they've been doing. We have said all along, Mr. Speaker, we're looking forward to working with them rolling out this fund. We'll continue to monitor the fund, Mr. Speaker, make sure it is meeting the needs of those Nova Scotians in the industry, and we'll continue to do so, Mr. Speaker, just like we do with every other fund that government delivers to the people of this province.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the Community-Governed Nursing Home Society of Nova Scotia represents over 80% of the not-for-profit care facilities in Nova Scotia. And last night they issued a press release regarding the McNeill government's funding cuts to long-term care. Mr. Speaker, they say it will be difficult to adopt new patient care standards imposed by government for long-term care because they require an investment, not a cut. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Why is the Premier cutting funding to not-for-profit nursing homes when their needs are actually increasing, not decreasing?
The Honourable Premier.
I thank the Honourable Member for the question. There's no question, Mr. Speaker, this province is facing very difficult challenges financially after 4 years of a Democratic Party, Mr. Speaker, that ignored many of the challenges we're faced with. We've asked all of our partners, Mr. Speaker, to help. We've asked, Mr. Speaker, all of our partners to help us bring this province back to some fiscal health, Mr. Speaker. So at the end of the day, when that reality happens, then all Nova Scotians will share in that success and benefit from that. I'm very proud of the work being done, Mr. Speaker, by nursing homes across this province who are from one end of Nova Scotia to the other, providing top-quality care to our seniors, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
much. Well, the Premier makes things up just like he made things up about the film tax credit, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this organization says in their release, of particular concern to us is that these cuts are not shared equitably among the long-term care sector. Some long-term care organizations will feel these budget impacts while others will not. And we believe that equity should prevail in decisions that are intended to be in the economic interest of Nova Scotia. So my question to the Premier is this. Cutting funding to nonprofit care facilities and leaving for-profit care facilities unaffected, how does that reflect this government's priorities, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question again. I want to tell her the financial challenges we're facing in this province. We value the contribution being made, Mr. Speaker, by all long-term care facilities across this province, the work that they've been doing to ensure that our seniors are cared for. I've had the great fortune of being in many of them as I traveled this province. Whether they're for-profit or not-for-profit, whether they're publicly owned or privately owned, Mr. Speaker, is not the questions I ask when we go in. We want to make sure that our seniors are being cared for, and I'm very pleased to report to this House that seniors across this province are cared for, Mr. Speaker, in a respectful, honourable, and safe way.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Business. The Department of Business was created in the budget of 2015-16 as a regular ministry. The cost of senior management is $3.3 million for this budget. There are 36 full-time employees, and the total gross departmental expenses are $114 million. The Financial Measures Act amends the Civil Service Collective Bargaining Act such that employees of the new business Nova Scotia department are excluded employees. So my question to the minister is, why does his department require only staff that are excluded or not subject to a collective agreement be employed there?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. Certainly we recognize and respect the role of bargaining unit employees aligned to certain positions with certain responsibilities, and in most cases the inability to ask for or apply any flexibility in those primary roles. The excluded classification, Mr. Speaker, allows the department that flexibility so that when there are challenges or needs, we're able to assign tasks and responsibilities that meet the needs of clients and meet the needs of business.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his explanation. With the collapse and split of the Department of Economic and Rural Development into a tourism agency and a newly named Department of Business, the Minister of Business has stated that staff expertise has been moved to the new Department of Business. Under the General Civil Service Regulations, an employee's pay rate on promotion may be higher than the pay rate prescribed in subsection 1. If, in the Commission's opinion, such as a higher rate is necessary to promote a qualified person to the position. In establishing this department, how many of these 36 employees, especially at the senior management level, received a promotion, a pay increase, while others from the Economic and Rural Development were asked to exit?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The classification for the positions within the new Department of Business have been determined in discussions and in dialogue between our Human Resource Department and the Public Service Commission. They're aligned to the roles and responsibilities of similar-like positions across government at those various excluded classification levels. And in these circumstances, the very same process was applied.
Just before we move on to the next question, I want to remind all members of the House, and in particular the leader of the New Democratic Party, that any suggestion that any member of this House is making things up or fabricating the information they're bringing forth is, in fact, unparliamentary. The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last week the member for Clare Digby had said it is a very onerous process to make sure that you submit a proper expense claim. Well, Mr. Speaker, it may be onerous, but it is important, and it is important that Nova Scotians can see where their money is being spent. Does the Premier agree that MLA expenses should be posted online.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to also remind him that it was this member of the House that actually led that charge, Mr. Speaker, that all MLA's expenses should be posted online. I want to tell you that Nova Scotians then get an opportunity to see how their member is spending the tax dollars towards their constituency, Mr. Speaker. And we believe, Mr. Speaker, that should translate to the Executive Council. We're looking at options about how we make that happen. There may be a regulation change that we could do, or, Mr. Speaker, there may be a need for a piece of legislation. But, Mr. Speaker, at this point, we're looking at all of our options.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm hoping the Premier will lead another charge. And I think I got two answers there for the price of one, which I appreciate. But, Mr. Speaker, we did bring forward a bill to this legislature to do just that just a couple of days ago. MLA expenses are posted online, we know that, but ministers don't have the same requirement. And I actually wasn't aware of that. I didn't realize that. Mr. Speaker, the member from Clare Digby also said last week in the government's response to our bill that I don't think we should just simply be creating bureaucracy. But, Mr. Speaker, the Premier has suggested that he would look at this. Will he look at this to ensure that ministers post their expenses online before the end of this sitting of the legislature?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, for a party that talks about cutting red tape, they got a bill for everything, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is we don't believe it's necessary for a piece of legislation to move forward. We're looking at what are the possibilities, and we'll do so, Mr. Speaker, in due time. But I want to remind all members of this House, my expenses, Mr. Speaker, are in the library of this House. I'm sure the librarian in the legislature would be more than happy to show all Nova Scotians those. I'm sure if they called and asked, he'd probably even fax them to them.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, accessing an emergency room in Cape Breton has been difficult over the past month. The ER at the Glace Bay Hospital have been closed more than 10 full days over a span of just 28 days. The Northside General ER also remains closed daily from 3 p.m. to 8 a.m. This forces people to the Cape Breton Regional Hospital ER, which then becomes overcrowded, and people end up waiting for hours for treatment, Mr. Speaker. And my question to the Minister of Health is, how much longer will the people of Cape Breton have to wait before these emergency room closures are resolved?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and pleased to say that this is as we speak, a work in progress. We have had initial conversations with Dr. John Ross and the clinical review that is currently going on to make sure that we have the right emergency services for the four primary locations in Cape Breton. And we should see, in fact, work underway as to what structure will be in place at Northside very shortly.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, I'm concerned that initial conversations are happening. This conversation should have happened a year ago, Mr. Speaker. The situation is urgent. Tomorrow, all three emergency rooms, Glace Bay, Northside, New Waterford, will be closed, leaving just one ER open for people in these communities, Mr. Speaker. This weekend, people in Glace Bay won't have access to their ER at all. It's scheduled to close from 3 p.m. Friday to 7 a.m. Monday. It's been almost 2 years since the McNeill government was elected. Why has the Minister of Health waited so long to address the emergency room closures, especially in Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We can talk about emergency room closures. However, we know that a great number of the smaller issues are being handled by primary care physicians. We have had additional capacity open in communities. We know that the mobile emergency vehicle in New Waterford is not getting quite the amount of pickup and the capacity that it has, but I can assure the member opposite that there is a plan that is being initiated, and we hope to see some of those results very soon.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday I asked the Minister about his plans to address the hundreds of postponed surgeries at the QE2 hospital. The minister said that we are at a point now where, quote, where ordering new equipment is very much at hand. The problem has canceled surgeries for nearly 3 weeks. Hundreds of Nova Scotians and their families are left with so many questions that they wait for their loved ones to have their much-needed surgeries. And as the leader of the NDP brought up, Carolyn Collins, a retired nurse whose mother's cancer surgery was canceled, says she worries that the window could close on whether or not her mother's tumor is operable the longer she waits. She says it's not fair. It's just not fair. They screwed up, and they're not dealing with it. And I'll table that document. So my question to the minister is, if ordering some new equipment was an option, why did the minister let this drag on for nearly 3 weeks and cancel hundreds of surgeries?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased to say that the QE2 Health Sciences team that is involved with the sterilization issue, along with the Provincial Health Authority, have been working to mitigate against the canceled surgeries. They have now started to see other sites where surgeries can take place. Currently, the VG is operating at 69% capacity, the infirmary at 65%. The ambulatory clinics are operating today at 100%.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And the Minister knows full well that those other sites should be working at 100, and if not 110%, because of the surgeries that people are waiting for today, whether it's hip, knee, or whatever long wait list that we have. They're still waiting for a report from the specialist as to what's going on in the sterilization process. And I think the minister said yesterday that he was waiting a report yesterday about what that substance was. So can the minister maybe provide us a little more of his plan of what the product is and what he's going to do to rectify it for Nova Scotians who are waiting for their surgeries?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for a very important question, because this is one that in fact concerns all Nova Scotians, since people come from all over the province for their necessary surgeries. And while, yes, the emergent services, surgeries that require immediate attention, yes, they are being done. But when people have surgery scheduled for months in advance, so they expect that when that day comes, or years, that in fact they will be carried out. So I'm pleased to say that that, you know, this is the 11th day. And we know that the problem exactly has not been discovered as of yet, but the time has come, and the department is committed to the purchase of new equipment.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the member, Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, after months of unnecessary strife and pressure, the government finally decided to reach a settlement with the family of Joellen Huntley regarding the insurance settlement money. This was a welcome decision. In December, the minister said she would ensure that the department's policy around these issues would be reviewed. Earlier this month, after the settlement was reached, the minister indicated that she would introduce changes in the coming weeks. My question for the minister is this: when will the minister introduce these policy changes to protect other families like the Huntleys from unnecessary lawsuits?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister opposite for the question, and I also want to commend him for the continued advocacy that he's doing on behalf of the Huntley family. A decision request was brought to me within the last week or so. My department, the Department of Community Services, is working very diligently with our colleagues at the Department of Health. There will be a policy change at some point in the future. Right now, we are looking at it, whether it is a regulatory change or if it actually needs legislative change. And so that will be forthcoming. If the change needs to be made legislatively, it will happen in the fall.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I'd like to thank the minister for that answer. The strength and resolve of the Huntley family is incredible. They remained optimistic in the face of losing crucial care for their daughter. Other families have endured similar tragedies as the Huntleys and should not worry that the government will come after them for their insurance money. My question for the minister is this. Has she consulted with families like the Huntleys and other families in this situation as part of her policy review?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you. I have every faith in the staff that went through the policy review at the direction of myself and the direction of the Premier, because at the end of the day, we want to ensure that every family doesn't have to go through this and that people who are in situations similar to the Huntleys get the care that they deserve in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is to the Minister of Business. In the budget, through its newly created Department of Business, the McNeill government cut $17 million in grants to companies that help support Nova Scotia jobs. Instead of telling the public which companies these cuts impact, the Minister of Business has decided to keep the details a secret. This is creating a great deal of uncertainty in the business community. As Nick Langley of the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses puts out, it's almost like you have to be a sleuth to find out about the grants. My question, why has the Minister of Business refused to make this information public?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. We're actually working on the information that the member opposite has asked for. My focus primarily, Mr. Speaker, is on the development of the new Department of Business, and we understand that the concerns my colleague has expressed is of interest to the public, and at the first opportunity we're able to, we will share that information with the public.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you for the answer from the Minister, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Minister has had 3 weeks since the budget was tabled to inform affected companies. He now has an obligation to inform taxpayers. After all, it is their money. So my question to the Minister, through you, Mr. Speaker, is why is he withholding this information from Nova Scotian taxpayers?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The work that we've undertaken is very detailed, and it deals in many cases with application-based funding for multiple programs across multiple departments. It's a lot of work. We're working towards that outcome, and at the first opportunity, we will share that information.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia. Aging demographics are impacting volunteer fire services across Nova Scotia. In HRM alone, volunteer firefighters' numbers continue to decrease, with places like East Ship Harbour and Grand Lake Oakfield lacking enough volunteers to staff stations in their areas. My question to the Minister, considering the decline in volunteer firefighters, my question is, what is the Minister doing to ensure there is adequate fire protection across Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. There's a number of initiatives ongoing within the fire services, and for the benefit of my colleague, that falls under the responsibility of municipal affairs. The initiatives that are undertaking, and I'll give a very good example, recognizing that the circumstances my colleague has referenced are in fact a concern for many volunteer fire services around the province. One example in Lunenburg County, it was led by the municipality where they actually amalgamated three different fire services under one and captured the membership of those three under one department, and they continue to provide a very valuable service to the community.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a number of Pictou County's 22 fire stations are constantly recruiting volunteers. The City of Halifax understands what it means not to have enough volunteers to man a rural station. The question to the Minister, what is the Minister planning to do to recruit and maintain an adequate number of volunteer firefighters in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would certainly do whatever I could, engaging our municipal partners in the area of fire services as a municipal responsibility, but I would challenge my colleague and his colleagues in Pictou County to work close with their communities in the consolidation of fire services so that we are able to sustain that service and that Nova Scotia volunteer firefighters can work to do what they intend to do through their training and their commitments to their community.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of TIR. The future of rail is on the mind of many Cape Bretoners as we move forward into the summer where we can finally start to see the tracks. This House, Mr. Speaker, this House passed legislation supported by all parties in favour of making sure that this company did the right thing. We need to keep the rails in place, and the Minister of Transportation struck a rail advisory committee and set out some very specific terms for that of reference for them. The mandate was to ensure Cape Breton continues to have necessary transportation links. So I'd like to ask the Minister if he could tell us an update on what's going on with the committee and what topics they've examined thus far.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we're coming on a year now since the Rail Advisory Committee for our department and for our government has been struck. There's been tremendous collaboration among three levels of government. We've got the stakeholders, the private sector, companies who are impacted by the rail service, other community representatives across Cape Breton, not just for the industrial area. So it's been great collaboration. What the committee is working on now is finalizing details for three particular studies: truck versus rail options and how intermodal transportation impacts the economy, on the economic opportunities that exist for particularly the Sydney port, but for Sydney as a whole, and about the liabilities that will be left should abandonment take place, and also what will it require to get that rail up to an acceptable level of service should there be increased traffic. So there's lots of work, Mr. Speaker. It's still not a puzzle that we've solved yet, but certainly working together as Cape Bretoners and as Nova Scotians, we'll do our best to get there. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister for his answer. The terms of reference specify that the committee will submit their final report this spring. And you know, Mr. Speaker, the time is traveling on. Our community needs this vital transportation link just as much as Yarmouth needs its ferries. And Mr. Speaker, I know I speak for myself and other MLAs from Cape Breton to work with the community, all the Cape Breton MLAs and the Minister, to keep this vital link alive. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister commit to the final report and share that with the hosts? And could the Minister explain to us what we can tell the residents of CBR on a meeting on Friday being held in Sydney to talk about this very important vital transportation link to our community?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as the member knows, we're now into 2016 with the abandonment process stretching into next year, so that our department, Transportation, has the opportunity to look at the abandonment filing by G&W to ensure that it meets our needs. There's been too many situations where taxpayers of Nova Scotia have been on the hook for environmental remediation projects. That's not going to happen this time. We want to know all the information on the table and so that we're not left stuck with a bill. But having said that, Mr. Speaker, we are still committed to the rail. We want to make sure that's going to stay on the ground. But as we said from the beginning, and all stakeholders that have been involved in this conversation, there has to be a business case. This isn't about the long-term subsidy. This is about the long-term growth and development of the Port of Sydney. So we're going to keep working on that, Mr. Speaker. The final report will be due in early summer. The three reports I had mentioned are a big piece of that. So that'll give us a lot of details about where we go from here. But again, Mr. Speaker, this is about building a business case for the people of Sydney, the people of Cape Breton, and for Nova Scotia Rail. Thank you very much.
Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week I tabled a 2008 economic impact study by CanMac Economics Limited on the film sector, and in it, it stated that the industry is a direct employer of skilled immigrants. So, Mr. Speaker, the Ivany report said we needed to grow our economy by attracting more skilled immigrants. I'd like to ask the Premier, Mr. Speaker, why didn't he take into account the considerable role the film tax credit had in growing our economy when he decided to gut that credit, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the honourable member for the question. I want to thank Screen Nova Scotia for the work they've been doing to continue to work with government to find a delivery model of the money, Mr. Speaker, from taxpayers to the industry that would work for them and allow them to continue to operate in this province. We're grateful for their cooperation and the work they've been doing. We're grateful that we've come to a resolution that works, Mr. Speaker, for the taxpayers and for the industry, and we're looking forward to them to be here and continue to grow.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, whether or not it's a resolution remains to be seen, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the study also states that the high level of foreign filmmaking in the province, along with domestic production, results in employment of many new visitors to Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, given the aging workforce and as a result of a shrinking labour force, why would the Premier make it difficult to attract new younger immigrants to Nova Scotia with his decision to gut the film tax credit?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to inform the honourable member we're making it easy for new immigrants to come to Nova Scotia. I'm very encouraged and grateful for the fact that the federal government has lifted raised the cap from 700 to 1050. Mr. Speaker, we've reached that cap. We're continuing to work with them to make sure that we grow that number. We know we need more people. The work being done that allows university students to come to this province as university students to apply to the nominee program, which is the first time in our history, Mr. Speaker, that we've allowed that to happen. I also want to remind her that the program that's been worked on between the film industry and the government, Mr. Speaker, broadens the opportunity to take into account more activity besides just labour that takes place in this province, other services that are being distributed into the sector. That will mean more Nova Scotians will get an opportunity to benefit from that fund, Mr. Speaker, and the revenue that's being distributed by taxpayers to each production.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Business. There's no doubt that the Liberal government made a huge mistake with the film tax credit. And in spite of significant evidence and a prolonged outcry, there's a continued refusal to admit that their plan was flawed. It took weeks of turmoil, including a massive protest outside the legislature, to make government realize that something was wrong. So my question for the minister is, can the minister shed any light on why thousands of Nova Scotians were put through weeks of uncertainty and the government didn't do their homework before the budget?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank my colleague for the question. Not quite sure what the question is. One of the most important things identified in the Ivany report, Mr. Speaker, was that we could not continue with status quo. It necessitated change. This government has taken that report seriously, and in the creation of the Department of Business, we are on a transition, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that services provided in the past in a changed method of delivery will meet the needs of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The question was about why not do the homework before instead of after, and I think the leap to Mr. Ivany is a little bit ironic when we're talking about homework. But there can be no doubt that the government made a mistake. And all the government had to do was look across Canada and realize that their changes would destroy the film industry in Nova Scotia. Doing a jurisdictional scan is good public policy. And the Minister of Justice, I think, learned that the hard way back in the fall. So what words does the minister have for those thousands of Nova Scotians who feel that his government is acting first and talking to stakeholders later?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's a number of examples in government, Mr. Speaker, and I know I'd go beyond my 45 seconds if I was to allude to them. But we've done a tremendous amount of work in Service Nova Scotia to enhance the service delivery to all Nova Scotians. We've gone from an analog government to a digital government, Mr. Speaker. We've created platforms and mediums for Nova Scotians to access government, and it requires change. And if this member doesn't understand what change is, there's nothing I can do to respond to any question he might present. I'd like to have the magic wand that member believes is available to government to flip the switch.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is for the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, it's my understanding that the Tri-County School Board was scheduled to vote on April 28th yesterday on whether or not to eliminate the board's adult high schools in Digby and Yarmouth. The board has estimated that the move could save $177,000. My question to the Minister, could the Minister give the House an update with regard to the Tri-County School Boards regarding the adult high schools?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. And as we know, every time a budget time when funds are allocated to school boards have to make some very tough decisions. But in face of declining enrollment, boards have to look at what services and supports can they continue to provide. Tri-County has made a decision, apparently, that they want to look at their adult high school, but that is a board decision. I would also add, however, Mr. Speaker, that the decline in enrollment in Tri-County is significant, and the decline in funding to that board does not correspond to the decline in enrollment.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a number of former and current adult high school residents have raised concerns over the possible closures in Digby. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. For instance, some feel that after having a family, the flexibility of an adult high school enabled them to complete their studies when they would not have been able to do that in a regular high school setting. Some even suggested that without the adult high school, they would have dropped out or be forced to go on social assistance. My question to the Minister: does the Minister share the concerns of these students, and will she ensure that the adequate services will remain in place for these students who attend adult high schools?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I think we would all recognize the importance of adult high schools. Many students who, for whatever reason, have not been successful in the regular public schools do go back to adult high schools. They do get the upgrading and the programming that they need to qualify them for further education or for employment, and I congratulate every one of them for their effort to come back to the environment and learn.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the Minister of Health announced that the renovations of the third and fourth floor of the Dartmouth General Hospital will begin. Last week, during estimates, the Minister stated that this would mean 33 beds on those floors will be closed. The Minister also suggested that the system can absorb patients from these 33 beds at the Camp Hill and the QE2, not replacing 33 beds, but could absorb it. This is despite the fact that the Dartmouth General is already experiencing issues with overcrowding. So, Mr. Speaker, where is the Minister's plan to ensure that the closure of these 33 beds will not push the Dartmouth General's overcrowding issue into other hospitals?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. Anytime a major reconstruction goes on in our hospitals, we do have to make provision for the movement of patients. They do have capacity to hold on to a small number of patients that would normally be on the 33-bed transition floor. There is a provision at Camp Hill and at the infirmary to have space to accommodate some others from Dartmouth General.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During estimates, I asked the Minister if there was any money allocated within this year's budget for the fifth floor, completion of the fifth floor, and the Minister had indicated that there was no funds allocated this year. During the announcement yesterday, they did mention the fifth floor, so I'd like to ask the Minister, can the Minister explain when we can expect the empty fifth floor to be ready for use for Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In terms of the money, the $4.5 million plus the 25% the foundation will provide is primarily for the reconstruct third and fourth floors. They are able to incorporate some electrical and plumbing, in other words, an initial stage preparation for work to continue on the fifth floor. I'm pleased to say that the initial design stage is now with TIR.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In December, the Auditor General released a report identifying problems in the healthcare system that have made wait lists and surgeries longer. The Liberal platform said that Nova Scotians will meet the national standard for 6 months for knee and hip replacements. The government invested $6 million to cut wait times, Mr. Speaker, and even though the Auditor General said the department determined it would require $35 million. So the Minister's own department knows that the investment will not result in shorter wait times for hip and knee replacements. So my question to the Minister, why is the Minister putting a Band-Aid on this problem instead of tackling the wait list directly?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I can tell the member opposite is how pleased I am as Minister, and we are a government and department, that a plan has been initiated by the orthopedic surgeons in the province, developing capacity within the system and surgical teams, will take time. And the member opposite remembers that while he was minister, he also allowed the list to grow.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Auditor General also pointed out that numerous committees and advisory boards had been struck by the department and DHAs to address wait times. Very little progress, if any, has resulted. Some had failed to implement even their own recommendations. And in one case, no plan was produced after 2 years of meetings. The Liberal platform promised a province-wide surgical plan for the first year, and we have yet to see it, and we're already into year two. So my question to the Minister is, why is the Minister content with just the status quo? And when will he table his province-wide surgical plan?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased in the short 45 seconds, maybe 50, remaining to bring him up to speed that in the very first year we were in office, we added 4.2 million, which was broken down into a number of ways to add additional foot and ankle surgeries by a number of orthopedic specialists in the province. We also did an additional 350 to 400 hips and knees. And this year, I'm pleased to inform the member opposite, we will add another 400 surgeries this year.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition. Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers have expired. We'll now move on to opposition business. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just before we get to the business of the day, may I do an introduction?
Permission granted.
Mr. Speaker, it's a great pleasure to introduce to the House a true Renaissance woman, a very big part of the business community in Amherst, an MBA who I know is here to honour Dr. Dodds, the President of St. Mary's, who will be retiring, and there's a big dinner for him tonight, and that is Ms. Elizabeth Smith McCrossan of Amherst. I ask her to rise and receive the warm welcome of the House of Assembly.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can we call private members' public bills for second reading?
We'll now call private members' public bills for second reading.
Could we now call Bill number 72, the Fair Drug Pricing Act?
We'll now call Bill number 72, the Fair Drug Pricing Act.